You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Norman Bell.
Most business stories are kind of like a little bit of problem and a lot of solution. You know, a lot of, hey, here's our features and our benefits and how we help them solve the problem. And that's useful information, but it doesn't really access that emotional center of storytelling that the stories we love do.
Norman is a storytelling and presentation coach, award-winning speaker, theater and film actor, and author of the book, The Story-Powered Speaker, How to Own the Stage, Enchant Your Audience, and Grow Your Business Using the Magical Power of Storytelling. Norman is passionate about helping purpose-driven entrepreneurs and organizations communicate their stories and messages more effectively so that they connect with their audiences on an emotional level, which leads to more clients, more donations, and more impact. Norman, welcome to On Brand.
Nick, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
I am thrilled to have you here. We've had a short summer hiatus here on the On Brand podcast, but are glad to be back to it, and especially with what is increasingly becoming one of my favorite topics, and that is what the subtitle of your book calls the magic power of storytelling. Mm-hmm. And what I love about this is that it is useful to both organizations and individuals, but because, like, I guess maybe all magical powers, it is so vast in nature, where do you start with something as big, as broad as story?
Yeah, it's something that I am still exploring all the different routes and possibilities of how businesses, entrepreneurs, organizations can use storytelling. My book is focused on telling stories on stage, but a good portion of the book could be, you know, used for developing stories in a variety of, you know, that could be communicated out in a variety of different channels. My beginning effort with storytelling was from a few years ago. I started doing workshops for entrepreneurs. And I take that, and the book does this as well, takes people through a simple three-step process to uncover their stories, craft, and then fine-tune their stories. And you can apply this very simple process to a variety of types of stories, and we can talk a little bit about some of the different types of stories that leaders and founders might want to tell. But I start with the origin story. So just kind of your why story, like, why do you do what you do? So that's where I would start.
That's, I love that, that starting with the origin story, and like so many things, branding and marketing focused, it gets back to that Simon Sinek starting with why, which is really foundational for an individual on a stage or an organization, on a stage of a very different kind. You went back and talked early on about how much of your book is about telling stories on stage, but applicable elsewhere. And I sometimes find in a business context, there can be this resistance to an idea if it is not immediately 100% calibrated to exactly what we're doing, what our business is. I sometimes think that probably a leftover of the internet age is this expectation of 100% customization, that this is going to be this is exactly applicable to what I do. But something as foundational as storytelling is something that is truly, at its core, something that is broadly applicable. What are some of those other building blocks of story that are applicable to both individuals and organizations?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, maybe just start with this, like why, I'm not sure, maybe your listeners, you've had other storytelling people on the podcast, but in case they're new to this, I sense that storytelling is sort of in the air and for business now. It's maybe not the first time your listeners have heard, oh, storytelling's important, but why is that? And I can tell you, well, I can tell you a story. One of my storytelling hats that I've worn over the years is as a solo theater performer. And a number of years ago, I did a short solo performance about Mango, who was an 18-pound curmudgeon of a cat that I had a tempestuous relationship with a number of years ago. And it was a short story about, you know, how we hated each other at first, how we grew to love each other, and then how Mango died and how that left me kind of heartbroken. And you know, I basically thought it was a pretty simple story, but I realized afterwards that it had a powerful effect for certain people in the audience, right? Every night, certain people would come up to me, sometimes with tears in their eyes, holding up pictures of their animals, you know, oh, this is my dog Coco. He died two years ago. I really related to your story. And I heard that phrase over and over again. I really related to your story. And that's one example of that I've, you know, experienced in my own life of the emotional impact that storytelling can have. And facts and figures and data just don't get there. It doesn't mean that they're not important, but they actually, storytelling accesses a different part of the brain from facts, figures, and data. So facts, figures, and data are processed by the neocortex, a relatively newer part of the brain, whereas storytelling gets to that, the emotional center of the brain, the limbic brain. And that's where decision-making takes place, so you're gonna wanna get back there. So that's kind of, you know, just a you know, short version of the why of storytelling. It's really connecting with people on a very human, emotional level. So, you know, I think that's important to understand. It's like, well, why am I doing this? It just because everybody says storytelling is important. So that's one reason. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I never get tired of the science of storytelling, because I do think that I love how you said storytelling's in the air, and I think that there are a lot of different ways that businesses interpret that, and I think one of the ways that they can misinterpret this being in the air, the trend of story, is to think that it's kind of a squishy woo-woo thing that maybe they can sprinkle a little bit of that on something. But that's why I think it bears repeating, the science of why, you know, we will dump facts and stats all over everything, and it's nothing anybody wants to pay attention to, can pay attention to, and more importantly, they struggle to remember.
Yes, exactly. I like what you said there, sort of like, well, let's just sprinkle a little bit of storytelling on this. I actually did a consulting project recently where I was sort of recommending, like, you know, hey, let's tell a different kind of a story, these more human, you know, emotional stories. And they kind of came back a little bit with like, well, can we just kind of insert the humans element, the human emotional element into the stories we're already doing? And I totally understand that, because it's a little bit hard to explain unless you kind of go into it, like, what is a story, right? Like, what's a real story, right? And maybe I'd ask your listeners to think about a favorite movie of theirs, or a favorite book, or you know, or some other kind of a story, and whatever comes to mind. Let's say for me, it's we've been kind of binge watching Lord of the Rings again recently, and you know, what are some of the elements of your your favorite stories. And then think about like a business success story, you know, and I've written a lot of these and they have the word story in them. But are they really stories? You know, at the heart, you know, in some ways I don't necessarily think this is a great thing because we focus a lot on, we end up, you know, spending a lot of our attention on problems and conflict, but at the heart of every story is trouble, is conflict. And basically, you know, the arc of a traditional story is the three acts, the beginning, middle, and end. In my workshops, I call them context, conflict, and conclusion. And by far, the largest part of a story is the conflict. You know, you're watching the hero go through a journey, a series of challenges, hopefully overcoming obstacles. But, you know, whether they do or not, in the end, you know, they either win or they don't. But maybe they've learned a lesson along the way, right? Most business stories are kind of like a little bit of problem and a lot of solution, you know, a lot of, hey, here's our features and our benefits and how we help them solve the problem. And that's useful information, but it doesn't really access that emotional center of storytelling that the stories we love do.
Are you enjoying this conversation about branding? If so, I'd love to bring my Brand Now keynote speech to your next conference or corporate event. Based on my popular book, Brand Now, this talk breaks down the seven dynamics of building a standout brand in our crowded, distracted world. Entertaining and educational, your audience will learn, laugh, and leave with ideas they can implement right away. Learn more, including watching video and viewing popular presentation topics at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's nickwestergaard.com/speaking. Now back to the show.
So I want to talk a bit more about what you said about how our business success stories, and I love that quick hit there, that because we were told to, you know, let their hair down a little bit and call them success stories instead of case studies. But I do think, yeah, you asked a very important question of, are these really stories, because of your point about over-indexing on solution and little on problem. And I feel like sometimes we have this this kind of aversion to, you talked about the importance of conflict, but to conflict, we're afraid it's going to depress our customers if, yeah, we dwell on what the pain is. But I think, yeah, we have to be able to, I mean, we can't be a dirge, but we have to describe it accurately, yeah, to be able to express it. But it's a hang up.
Yeah. I mean, I totally get that. It's like it goes against basically the instinct in business to focus on the the negative, or what, yeah, what's perceived as the negative. But if you just have to think about the framework of a classic story. Let's use Star Wars as another example that we probably most people are familiar with. And so my analogy is, you know, if we told Star Wars in the way that we tell a typical business success story, it would be about 15 minutes of battle and then about an hour and a half of the award ceremony at the end, right? Like, we're just not interested in that part of the story. We're interested in, like, oh my gosh, are they going to make it? Oh, what's going to happen? And, oh, Luke and Han and Leia, they're going to overcome. Oh no, and Darth Vader, the villain, and so forth. And then the award ceremony is like 5 minutes at the end, as well it should be. It's like the end. Yeah. But and maybe, again, that's a flaw of, you know, like one of the things that we could work on as humans is being more interested in, hey, we achieved peace. But it just isn't what naturally attracts our attention.
Norman, this is interesting because I actually had some fun with this very, very point that you're making. In a brand storytelling workshop that I was working on, and I actually got out the old stopwatch and timed from blowing up the Death Star to the medal ceremony, and it's a couple minutes. The Wizard of Oz, Dorothy clicks her heels, and it's like less than 2 minutes that she's back home and spent time in Kansas, this place she's been working to get back to the whole movie. And it's just a couple quick minutes there. In Toy Story, when Buzz and Woody finally get back to Andy, it's a couple minute quick wrap up scene. So yeah, I love the that I've never heard it actually applied like you said. That yeah, what if the medal ceremony was that much of Star Wars? But that's what we're doing.
Yeah, and not to get too into news and so forth, but just if you look at the front page of the New York Times online, let's take our current situation with the coronavirus. Like, the coronavirus is back up, but what happens when the numbers go down? Is it that we spend a lot of time celebrating hey, we solved that problem? No, that story just goes down the page. You have to scroll way down to find it, and then new problems kind of take the limelight. So we're surrounded by this. I mean, I guess I focus on this, so I see it more and more. As like we're surrounded by this structure. Also, like, what's the latest Netflix series you binge watched? You know, like, it was probably one that was really compelling because there was a lot of trouble, right? I'm thinking of House of Cards, for example, or Breaking Bad, or something like that. Whatever the new one of those is, it's what gets you going through it. It's not, hey, we solved the problem in episode one. I mean, after that, there's what else is there to watch? You know, it's that's what brings us through.
Well, applying it to the news is a great example of it too, because we can see that what the news is where there's conflict, where there's interest. I think it was Kurt Vonnegut in his Story Shapes rejected thesis that said that there's, no good story about someone woke up and had a very good day. there's struggle, there's conflict in all of this. And I think if businesses are still struggling on seeing the importance of this, I think one of the big points here is how hard it is to stand out today. That, we're having trouble getting our messages through with the modern economics of attention. But what we attend to is the conflict, is the House of Cards, whatever Netflix thing that people are drawn to.
Yeah, and I'd like to add to that, though, that this line of conversation could be interpreted as like, oh, I need to be gimmicky and like, oh, and this happened and this happened and then there was an explosion. And no, it's we don't have space battles in our own lives, right? But what we do have is every single one of us, and there's absolutely no doubt about that now, since we're all going through a worldwide struggle, we have challenges in our lives. And so what I mentioned in my book, or what I recommend, is one of my tips is to get in trouble, which we've just talked about. But then one way we can do that in an authentic way is to get real. So it's just to talk about, and there's it's not a black and white situation. You don't, maybe in your first presentation to a new audience, you don't dump every horrible thing that's ever happened to you in your life on them, but people appreciate authenticity, and whether they will consciously realize it or not, as an audience member, I actually want to hear that you've struggled. I want to hear that you suffered. I want to hear that Richard Branson has struggled, right? That, if he gets to go to space as a billionaire, I want to hear a little bit about his backstory, that he had some hard times too to get there, right? It's kind of connecting with that human side of ourselves. And I've been on LinkedIn, for example, I see people telling their kind of authentic story, and they sometimes they are doing a good job doing that.
So you talk, we've talked a lot about the tenets of storytelling, and one of your other roles, we've spent a lot of time on brand storytelling, but I want to make sure with your work as a presentation coach,
yeah,
and certainly this unique year and a half has been an interesting inflection point in personal communication and presentation. Do you find that there has been one particular point in adapting our personal communication to this increasingly virtual landscape that we've found ourselves in the world of work? Is there one point that is anchoring that advice, or is there a spectrum of important points?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, yeah, I mean, as someone who is a public, I think you are too, Nick, right? Obviously,
yeah.
You know, we probably miss that live audience and being in front of a group of people, connecting with people, and God willing, we'll be able to do that at some point. Who knows? But yeah, I think in the meantime, I would say that the authenticity piece is an important part. You know, whether we're in front of people in a live audience or we're on a Zoom or Skype call, et cetera, I think that that's what can come through. And when I work with people as a presentation coach, I really focus. Some people are focused on move your arm over here and make sure and do this breath exercise and so forth. That can be useful, but for me, that's sort of like the icing on the cake. Like the real, where I start is helping people find that turning point moment in their life that is kind of the core of their origin story. And I'm always looking for, like, when do they light up? When does that story come alive as they're telling it? And there's a quote I have in my book. I'll have to I can't remember the is a film director who said that casting is 65% of directing. And what he means is, you know, if you cast the right person in the part, he's going to have to work so much less hard to get the performance he's looking for. And I would say the same with a story. You know, like, start with a story that's like, this is my story. You know, like, so it's really, I spend quite a bit of time with my clients uncovering what I call story gold, you know, that story that's got the real potential to connect with an audience. And I help them go through kind of an audition round to that's the one. And then we can apply the craft of story and fine tune it and so forth. But I think it's that finding that authentic story that really comes alive when you tell it is the important part.
That's a really, really great point. Plus, I feel like when you find that, you can take that experience and build on it elsewhere in your work as well.
Absolutely.
Norman, we've talked about a lot of things, from the Star Wars made up entirely of metal ceremony and very little space fights that has made me smile, but now yep. It is my turn to ask you for a brand that has made you smile recently.
I put down a couple of things as I was thinking about this question. And the first was just a small one. I actually have it here in front of me, a tube of toothpaste from Tom's of Maine. And I guess I haven't really thought about it that much, but we tend to buy Tom's products for things like, you know, toothpaste and, you know, underarm deodorant and so forth, because they tend to be more natural and, you know, so forth. And they're I think this is a new, phrase or, you know, slogan that they have is "Do a little good today," is what it says next to their logo. And when I first read it, I thought, like, well, what are they're telling me to do a little good today? And I almost, I just a very mini sort of like, what are they telling me to do good today for? But what has happened? One is I feel like they're walking their talk. So it's not just not to offend anybody who loves McDonald's or something, but I'm not sure if McDonald's said do a little good today, I'd be like, I don't know. I'm going to take that advice. But Tom's, I feel like, hey, they're doing some good today by providing these, natural products. And then every morning, so this is on a product that I see every morning, it's like, oh yeah, maybe I'll try to do a little good today. Just like a little, it's just like the little bit of toothpaste that I get out of this, Tom's container. I'll try to do that, at least that much good. So that's one thing. And then if I have time, just briefly, as far as a personal brand thing goes, I know people might have different feelings about this, but I really, what made me smile, or at least it made me satisfied, was to read about Simone Biles and that she chose to step out of the Olympics for her mental health and well-being. And I have suffered from clinical depression in the past and really known the depths of mental illness. And so coming from that perspective, she said at some point, she said, there's more to life than gymnastics. And to me, that was like so powerful. Like that would be easy for a lot of people to say, but for Simone Biles, the greatest gymnast in the world, by many accounts, to say that is, I think, powerful. It may mean in years to come that some other people, whether they're athletes or not, may be at that breaking point, and they'll think about Simone Biles and say, you know what? I don't need to risk my life for this. I can step away. There's more to life than gymnastics or whatever the case may be. So anyway, those are my two things.
Well, those are two great smiles, and I feel like the very on-brand smiles for our conversation, because they are rooted in authentic story. And I think that's kind of the through line of this conversation and certainly your work, Norman. Speaking of which, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Yes. So to learn more about the book, you can go to storypoweredspeaker.com. That's storypoweredspeaker.com. And if just putting this out there as an offer to your listeners, if you email me at norman@normanjbell.com, that's norman@normanjbell.com, and you request this, I will send you a free PDF version of the book. And if you're interested, I'll send you a link to schedule a free 30-minute consultation to talk anything about story. If you have a story that you're like, hey, I'd just like some advice about this, or hey, I've got some turning point moments, I'd like to try these out, I'd be happy to spend 30 minutes with you.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Norman, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thank you so much, Nick. It's been great spending some time with you.
And if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, remember you can listen free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your favorite platform may be. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.